So today I'm going to talk about the scallop electron beam FEL. That's when you try to deliberately mismatch the electron beam in a wiggler so that it undergo Betatron motion. Let me first acknowledge my co-authors, Bill Coulson and Henry Freund. And also, I'd like to thank the Office of Naval Research and the High Energy Laser Joint Technology Office for financial supports. So basically, let's consider the natural focusing, two-plane focusing wiggler. You can do that by having a parabolic pole face, like the one at the top, or you can also cut a notch in the magnet so that now you can introduce sectable field in both the X and Y direction, which is shown for, as a magnetic field in the vertical direction. You can expand that and keep only the two terms, and you see that there's a sectable field that gives you focusing in both planes. Now, you can write the envelope equation for the electron beam as a function of Z, and you can see that you have the focusing term over here, and the space charge term, and the emittance term, which is basically the diffraction of the electron. In the for the kind of parameters we're talking about, this term is going to dominate, and you can solve for the emittance-dominated match beam radius, and that's a function of strictly the normalized emittance and the wiggler parameters. It depends on beam energy. So in a normal, usual way of FEL, you would match the electron beam into the wiggler so that the radius stays constant, and that's shown here in this plot. This is a plot of the motion envelope as a function of Z, and the match beam radius is sigma naught. Now, if you mismatch the electron beam, then you will get oscillation due to Betatron motion, and you can write the equation for that down here. This is the equation for the deviation from the match beam radius, and you can see the three terms, focusing, space charge, and emittance. The RMS radius can be solved, and you see that it's basically a sinusoidal function with a frequency of k sigma. That's k sigma is the scalloping frequency, and that is approximately twice the Betatron frequency, with a small correction due to space charge. But basically, the scalloping wavelength is about one half of the Betatron wavelength, which is shown here. This is the Betatron motion. One wavelength is over here, and the scalloping period is half of that. In the following examples, I'm going to show you that you will try to do is have a wiggler length about 25% longer than the scalloping wavelength. And the reason for that is you, in our case, you want to have the waste, electron beam waste, near the entrance and also near the exit of the wiggler. And that's shown here. This is the wiggler up here at the top. I'm not doing very well with this mouse. And the electron beams are the black right here, and you see that I'm trying to put the waste at the entrance and near the exit of the wiggler. And because of optical guiding, you have the optical beam also follow the electron beam and it's pinched at the near the exit of the wiggler. That's the right way of doing it. The wrong way of doing it is to put a waste in the middle of the wiggler, because what happened here is that the electron get high gain here, but near the exit of the wiggler, you don't have very high gain. And that has been actually presented by Peter Crooker this Monday as a poster. And what they're plotting here is the efficiency of the scallop beam FEL as a function of dimensionless wiggler length. One is the end of the wiggler. And if you put the electron beam waste at about 18% of the wiggler length, and because of Betatron motion, you get the waste again at about 80%, 78%. That gives you the maximum efficiency, whereas if you put the waste in the middle, then you get the lowest efficiency. And the reason for that is because if you look at the FEL gain length for an amplifier, the FEL gain length is proportional to sigma to the two-thirds power. And that's for 1D theory. If you go to the 3D theory, it's approximately about sigma to the one-half power or so. But the idea here is that if you look at the gain length as a function of Z, and you put a waste at the beginning, you get high gain at the beginning where you can overcome lethargy. And then in the middle, you will lose gain because the gain length goes up. You lose some gain here. But at the end of the wiggler, this is where you really want to have a small radius. And that's because the small radius give you a higher saturated power. Notice that this is sigma. This is a function of 1 over sigma to the 2/3 here. And there's also some sigma function in here. So basically, you want a small waist near the end where you want to have a high, if you have, want to have a saturated power. So this is a plot. We're doing simulations to show that the scalar beam FEL does better than the match beam FEL. This is the typical match beam FEL when the electron beam's radius is constant. And the power, which is plotted here in red, is grow exponentially with z, that's a linear in the log scale, until it gets to saturation. And notice that the FEL beam radius is optically guided here until it gets to near saturation. When you look at the scalar beam FEL, this is a case where you focus near the entrance of the wiggler, and then the beam come back down to a waist at 2 meters. The power grows very fast because in this regime, the gain length is short. So you get a very short lethargy region. And then go into exponential gain region where the gain length is long, so it takes longer to reach saturation. But at the end of the wiggler, the saturated power is higher. It's not easy to see on this log scale, but on the next slide, you see that this is actually about 20% higher. So basically, the scalar beam FEL gives you a shorter lethargy region, longer saturation length, takes longer to saturate, and higher saturated power compared to the match beam FEL. I'm showing here there's a power on a linear scale, so you can see that the scalar electron beam FEL gives you higher power. At the peak, you get about more than 1 gigawatt compared to less than 0.9 gigawatts for the match beam. The match beam is plotted in red, and this is a plot of power versus wavelength to show you the detuning. Normally, you would want to operate near the peak, so this is where you had optimum detuning. Notice that the match beam FEL gives you much modulation and also higher power than the, I'm sorry, the scalar beam FEL gives you modulation than the match beam FEL. And you get some modulation that is approximately 5 nanometer, with a 5 nanometer period. Also, the gain bandwidth is narrower. Let's show you that the gain of the scalar beam is lower. You can also do better than that. If you put a step taper section at the end of the wiggler where the beam comes back to a waist again, then you can actually pinch the optical beam to a very small spot. Now, why you want to do that? In amplifier FEL, you are plagued with optical damage on any piece of optics that you put in the path of the FEL beam because the FEL beam is very high power, peak power and average, and the divergence is very small, typically less than a milliradian. So if you pinch the radiation beam near the wiggler, it's like you force it into a small waist, and then it will diffract by natural diffraction into a larger spot later on. It will increase the divergence angle. Also, because of this second step taper, that's the subject of my next talk, which is at 12:30, then you get a higher efficiency in the step taper wiggler. So the bottom line here is that the step taper provides additional gain in the near saturation, and that gives you optical gain, and that pinches the optical beam, and the optical beam diffracts rapidly, and that reduces the intensity on the mirror. And this is already published in the recent FISREP SDAB. In summary, scalar beam FEL uses natural betatron oscillations in electron beam envelope to modify the optical beam. And in fact, you could actually think about using a scalar beam to cause the FEL beam to come to a focus after it exits the wiggler. So it's possible you can do some kind of manipulation of an FEL beam, such as an X-ray FEL, where you put a focus past the end of the wiggler. The scalar beam with electron beam waste near the entrance and exit of the wiggler produces a higher power than a match beam, not much, but you get 20-25% increase in power. The optical beam can also be pinched near the end of the wickler, and that gives you a larger divergence angle. And the only drawback that I can see is the scalar beam FEO requires a slightly longer wickler to reach saturation. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. And the floor is open to questions.
Didn't you try to have the matched beam as along the whole undulator, but to focus beam with some kind of doublet at the very end of undulator to get the same results, but to get a shorter Wiggler for amplification?
Yes, that's actually the initial idea that Phil Sprengel came up with, and that you focus electron beam only near the exit. That will work if you have if you ignore the fact that in the doublet you actually have some dephasing going on. That dephasing may be small for some FEO condition, but that idea will also work. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions? We have one more question here from Avi Gova.
Just a small comment. There is another drawback, and it is the fact that you have to have a better emittance if you are walking off the ideal matched no scalloping condition.
Actually, I was using the same emittance for the scallop beam as the match beam, and the nice thing about the scallop beam is that you don't need a low emittance. It just need to come to a focus occasionally. You don't need to match it to a small beam throughout the wiggler. You only need a low emittance if you want to match it to a smaller spot throughout the wiggler.
If your emittance is already small enough that you don't have a problem of operating in the cold beam regime, then of course it doesn't matter if you spoil it a little bit by not matching. But clearly when you don't match, the emittance effect is bigger.
You're talking about the emittance due to the mismatch in the wiggler?
Yeah, if your beam expands more, then clearly you have more effect of the transverse gradient. The best condition for having the least effect of emittance is when you have matched beam condition. But if you have good enough emittance, it doesn't matter, of course.
Yeah, I think in the case we study right now, we consider the match beam and the scallop beam with the same emittance. And it turns out that in both cases, the beam emittance doesn't affect it very much. You're right. We have a very good emittance beam. But the main point here is that you don't need a good beam, a low emittance, to focus at a tight spot. You can always focus to as tight a spot you can, except that you won't get that throughout the wiggler. That's all.
Thank you for that. Okay, thank you, speaker, again.
Thank you.